This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Tom and Jess on Joy.
Now we've got Dr. Tim Reed from the Victorian Greens, member for Brunswick. Thank you so much for coming in. We got lots to talk about today, haven't we?
Yeah, so thanks for having me. And I want to take it to somewhere we haven't been this morning, which is syphilis, which we talked about last time.
I feel like we have been here this morning, but that's only because of all the stuff we've talked about today. So, yes, we talked a little bit about that last time, wasn't it? Or was that a different one?
No, that was it. We talked about the update and I was very upset to know that the community health centres that we have in here are very limited. I thought we had a lot more, but it's what we talked about. But
yeah, spot on. So Melbourne has one major public sexual health service just up the road in Carlton and Swanson Street, a big, busy and productive clinic, but they're flat out and they're turning patients away. Last time we spoke, I said, oh, we're getting about 1,300 cases of syphilis a year, but we've just got the figures for last year, and it's almost 1,600. And that's an increase from near enough to zero around 2000. In fact, I think there were two cases in 1999. So we have a syphilis epidemic.
Yep.
It has been largely centred around gay men for the first decade of the century, but sometime in the last 5 or 6 years or whatever, it's trickled into the heterosexual population. The particular issue there is that when pregnant women get infected, the death rate in newborns is around 50%. So after 10 years of no deaths, there's been 3 or 4 deaths
already
in newborns. But the other point is, it's a bad enough disease in anyone, straight, gay, male, female. If you recognise it, it's treatable with a single injection of penicillin.
Yeah.
But it's if it's not recognised and missed, and about half these cases have no signs or symptoms, then there's a significant percentage can get dementia or other sort of...
So the long-term effects are...
Brain, heart kind of damage, yeah.
Because it sends it crazy, doesn't it?
It has done, and there's a list of famous people, you know, Randolph Churchill or Al Capone and so on, who went mad from syphilis. Now, that's always going to be uncommon now because most cases get diagnosed and treated, but you really don't want your syphilis to go unnoticed. So the critical thing is getting tested, particularly people who've had new or casual sexual partners should have regular and frequent syphilis tests.
But you've just said people are getting turned away.
Exactly. So now your GP can do a syphilis test.
Yep.
But we really need expert backup for GPs because tests can be difficult to interpret, particularly if you've had it before. Mm-hmm. Is it a new case or an old case? Working out the precise regime of treatment can be tricky. And so for expert backup, I really think Victoria now needs at least one more dedicated public sexual health centre.
Yes.
And that's something the state government really needs to invest in.
And so what are we doing up there at Spring Street to try and pressure these buggers to spend the money?
Well, I've started with polite letters.
Oh, cool.
And, and we're going to work up from there. I made a statement in Parliament about it late last year. And the issue's squarely on the agenda. And to be fair to the government, I'm quite sure they're aware of it and thinking about it.
Oh, excellent. Because I always get worried, and we did talk about that, us living in the city, we might only have one sexual health clinic, which we're lucky to have, which is not enough. But what about those living in regional areas that actually don't even have one, or they only have a clinic that might come through one day a month through a community health centre? Because I think if you live in the country, you're probably less likely to go to your doctor to ask for a sexual health clinic.
It's the same guy you're going to see down at the...
Well, it's the same one that sees your grandmother and sees your senior family and things like that. What are we doing for our poor country friends?
Yeah, so I think the sexual health centre is doing great work with a telephone advice line for doctors. And so that, you know, with really good specialist backup on the phone, you can... A GP can do a hell of a lot more. They can deal with conditions that they haven't seen for a long time. But, you know, last year I think syphilis doubled in Mildura from, you know, 11 to 22 cases. That doesn't sound like much in Melbourne terms, but doubling is significant.
Yes. And I think we should also stop the stigma that, you know, your local doctor is going to think of you outside of, let you go there and do what you've got to do. Because I'm actually friends with my GP now and have been from Perth for about 16 years. And he's seen and heard everything from me, but still looks me in the eye. So I'm sure there's others out there that Tom's like, I don't want to hear anything.
Yeah, I just raising my eyebrows thinking just, no one wants to know giving you the stink eye, sweetheart. Like, it's all good.
But a couple of, like a week or so ago, there was a climate rally. And as we were talking, some of the posters were given shade. They were some of the most cutting ones. One particular was a CFA fiery koala texting saying, don't make me use all caps. So that's pretty shady. Did you see any more, firstly?
Look, I just spent the whole rally ducking under umbrellas and taking photos of people's placards. There was a black and white Scott Morrison, but with a real Hawaiian lei around his neck.
Oh, yes.
And lay him off. And there was this homo's not for ScoMo. I think that was Blinky Bill Bedecked in Gum Leaves who was saying that.
Oh,
so,
I love that.
An exploding thermometer with the caption, doubles as a bullshit detector.
Now, this is the one that they told us not to go to.
Well, no, the Victorian police tried to stop it because they said there was more important things for them to be worrying about taking care of a rally while mm-hmm. the state was on fire. Now, it's a hard one as a person to say. They say, well, actually, we're protesting because of the outrageous fires that are happening. But I could see their point of view. Does it take a lot of staffing?
But why does it need so many staff?
I think that you've hit the nail on the head there. Since when has a climate rally been a crime wave?
Well, I bring my daughter to them, so I'm obviously putting my cards on the table. I go to them. Yeah. I bring my five-year-old with me, and she holds her little part. Our poster just says, basically, Mars isn't ready yet. So why? Like, that's what our... It's not ready, so why are we stuffing this planet? Like, because it's we haven't got an option too. So I bring my five-year-old. So if my five-year-old's coming and most of my friends, my school's got a climate change like group, I don't think there's much need for police. There's a lot of mama bears out there that have got sharp elbows if there was anything that got a bit hard.
I think, like, the police backed away from that a little bit by the morning of the rally, and there was a huge turnout, and Swanson Street was a sea of umbrellas.
Yes.
So it was a great rally, and it just shows the extraordinary wave of concern, mixture of despair and anger and a desire for action about climate and the fires.
Well, Dr. Tim, while we've got you in here, so what is the Greens' post-fire recovery plan? I mean, I'm sure you guys, of course, would be wired across that and you'd be trying to push it up there at Parliament. But
is there a post?
Well, that's a good point, just because the fire season's not over yet.
Oh,
it might
just
be
begun.
Raining right now, but who knows what's to come. But critically, once the fires are out or mostly out, we need to do what we can to protect surviving habitat and wildlife. So in the very short term, I've got a lot of people in my electorate of Brunswick getting in touch with me saying, what, you know, feed the starving animals. And so some food drops are starting, and that's
I saw that
fantastic.
They're throwing some carrots out for, like, rock wallabies that are around that might be in trouble.
That's right. But we need to think a lot beyond that. What's just as important is, you know, once these animals survive into next week or the week after, they need habitat protected.
Mm.
And as things start to regrow when the weather cools down a little, we need to stop logging.
Yes.
Some of the remaining native forest habitat. Now, while these fires have been burning, logging has actually continued. And mm-hmm. so that's something that we need to critically reassess, and we need to transform our industries that extract wealth from forests and coal and so on. And that involves, it may involve spending some money to transition workers into new and different jobs, looking after what remains of our wild country.
I mean, we all agree here, but we do know mainstream media has been spreading, you know, false lies saying, you know, logging stops the fires happening, and the fires wouldn't be so bad if we cleared more land and we did all of these things. It's actually not true.
Correct. We know that the really dense regrowth of young trees after logging, it looks a bit like a wheat crop,
yes.
is much more flammable than natural forest. So So that's a key point. What I think we have a great opportunity to do now is to spend some money employing people to help restore some of this habitat, to work out which bits of habitat are vital to protect, and in those areas at least, to immediately stop logging. I think that's going to be...
Well, we have enough money coming in from Australia and around the world. I mean, we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars, and we've even now got people saying we're not going to spend it all. I mean, that's what the money's for. It is actually to help the poor people that have lost their homes, their schools, their businesses.
Do you agree that it needs to be held for later, or should it be spent now?
Look, I think money spent early is always worth more than money delayed, whether it's to help out someone whose caravan park has been closed and they're about to go bankrupt, or someone to rebuild their house or their farm. I think that early money is always more useful. Yeah. But the other point that I think Tom raised is that I think one of the biggest losses we've had and the economy has had has been this loss of nature.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
And it's worth spending some money on that.
And we know that's one of our biggest monies is tourism, and the world thinks that Australia's burnt to the ground. They're not going to come over here to look at our beautiful natural forests.
Conclude quickly by coming back to the rally, everybody there and everybody in my electorate wants us to transform our economy to get off burning Victoria's brown coal.
Yes, absolutely.
Dirty, dirty, dirty. Look, we love having you guys in here. We could talk forever, but Dr. Tim Reid, thank you so much for coming in, and we'll talk to you again shortly.
We adore you.
Wake up with Tom and Jess, Thursdays on Joy Breakfast. Tune in to 94.9 in Melbourne, stream live at joy.org.au, or download the Joy app. Find all our podcasts at tomandjessradio.com or subscribe on iTunes or Spotify. Joy Podcasts, where you want them, when you want them.
Thanks for listening to another Joy Podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.